I'm George. I'm a grateful alcoholic, everybody. You mind me pulling this thing off? Appreciate it. I want to thank Jim tonight for letting Mary Jo be the voice of this Atlanta Roundup. And Judy, I appreciate your kind introduction. Before I get started, I'd like to introduce Malanon from Fargo, Georgia. Jackie, would you stand up, please? She's still got brain damage. You notice how she minds? I want to thank the committee for asking Glenn to invite me to come up here and share my experiences, my strength, and my hope with you. And I think Keith S. from Nay Hunter probably had something to do with this, so thank you too, Keith. Like we say, we're supposed to tell our stories in a general way, what it used to be like and what happened and what it's like now. And if you people don't help me, I won't get through this thing. This is the most folks I ever saw. In fact, it's Fargo, Georgia. Well, there's more people in this room than there is in Clinch County, let alone Fargo, Georgia. But I am really happy to be here. It's great. And Judy said I could have 45 minutes, and I told her I'd take 45, so I should be able to get through this an hour and a half. Thank you very much. Fargo, now, for those that want directions, it isn't North Dakota. It's Fargo, Georgia, and it's on the west side of the Okeechobee Swamp, and it's on the Suwannee River. And I live about 3 miles further into the swamp from Fargo. And my group is Homerville group. We have 33 miles from the closest group. And the reason that we don't have a group in Fargo is because we don't have enough drunks, you know. But I'm thankful to God that you're laughing with me, because It is rough to stand up here before this crowd of people. Like I say, like some of you out there, I was barned, and it really got bad. We had a fella come over to Homerville about 6 or 7 months ago, and I was going to steal his talk, you know, this part of his talk, but he said he was barned down in the marshes of Glenn County, right out of Brunswick. And he said he was born in the early 30s, and a granny woman delivered him. He was born in December. And it was cold as a dickens, you know, and that northeaster blowing. And he was born at 2 o'clock in the morning, and they had to take a horse and run across the marches to get the granny mother to come over and deliver him. And she come, and she was very patient with his mother, and said that, you know, it was a rough delivery. And he knew that, you know, he was a tough boy. But he said the granny woman, she got in there and she delivered him and picked him up, to, you know, to spank him, and took a look at him and slapped his mother. And I wanted to claim that, but I can't, you know. But my story parallels his, because I really had some problems. I'm probably an addict, too. I have an addictive personality, and I played hell, you know, in my early childhood, and it got worse. But in Clinch County in South Georgia, we have a thing raging now, and we have controversies in AA that come along time to time, you know. And we have this thing that whether, you know, you were born an alcoholic, you drank yourself an alcoholism. And we had a girl in our group said, you know, she thought she was born an alcoholic, and I really can't go along with that. I don't know about the rest of you. Simply, I was nearly 5 years old before I had my first blackout, and I'm sure that, you know, that I couldn't have been born an alcoholic. But my story is one of insanity, and if I say something tonight to offend some of you ladies, please forgive me, because I have to use some words that we use in South Georgia in our vocabulary to explain the things that happened to me and to Jackie and my family. And this is a story of me and my family and my search for a new life. And some places they call me the Fargo Kid, because I was 42 years old when I got sober, and I was a 42-year-old young'un. You know what I'm talking about. I was really a child. But I'll move into my story tonight. I think really the character defects came before my alcoholism. I remember that when I was real young, I'd lie, and I'd cheat, and I'd steal. Now, I never did steal anything heavy. Don't get me wrong. I was told that, you know, about the hernias and things, and I never did pick up anything real heavy, you know. They're stealing automobiles and motor blocks now, but I wouldn't never think of doing something like that. But, I mean, my character defects came before my alcoholism. I can remember that very well, and I've never been out of the law or in the law. I'm the middle of the rotor, you know. I'd always in and out. But I graduated from Clinch County High School in 1951. No, I wasn't. I was expelled. I'm sorry. I like to lie about that. I was expelled in 1951, and I joined the United States Navy, and not soon after that, I did graduate, and I married just a little crazy woman here to my right. Now, reason I say she is crazy, she married me, and not long after we was married, she went into shock, and as you'll see as we move along, she had reason to go into shock. But we were married, and I had an illustrious Navy career, and it was during the Korean War. I was on the USS Navy Never Sail in San Diego. And we moved around to Pensacola, and I fought in those bars around there, you know, and won several Purple Hearts and a couple of captain's masks. But really, my career in the Navy wasn't that prominent, and I was discharged in 1955 and come home a war hero like some of these Vietnam veterans. They claim, you know, they wasn't recognized. Hell, they didn't recognize me in Fargo before I left or after I come back. But really, you remember the craze during the 50s or early 60s. They talk about, you know, that they introduced streaking in the college campus during the, you know, the middle 60s. Well, I introduced that in Fargo in the late 50s, you know. I mean, but really, now, every time I took a drink of liquor or alcohol of any form, I'd get drunk. I've never been in my life, I'd just take one drink and quit. I'd always get plastered, I mean, and Jackie can attest to that. And I did strange things, you know. Real strange. People, I was crazy. And I didn't think I was, you know. And then people would tell me, George said, listen, said, you know, you're crazy. When you drink, you shouldn't drink. And people were telling me back in 48, 49, 50, that I was having problems, you know, and no, hell, they were crazy, you know, and I was all right. But anyway, I come back from the Korean War, you know, and opened up a bait and tackle business in Fargo. That's right on the Suwannee River, and we had a lot of fishing and drinking and, you know, what goes along with fishing, drinking. And it was a dry county, so I couldn't sell any whiskey and beer, you know, but we had plenty of it for a customer. Anyway, to increase my business in Fargo, I opened up a zoo. We're right in the entrance of the Okanoke Swamp. I know I should be in there. But we opened up this zoo, and I introduced all the animals that you'd find around the Okanoke Swamp. I had them in the zoo, you know, and I worked there, so I was included. And we had bear and deer and rattlesnake and crocodile, not too many crocs. We had alligator and all the animals. And we had squirrel and fox and just everything, wildcat. And it was an attraction, you know. People would come there and see me half drunk and feeding the animals. And Jackie used to complain. I'd milk rattlesnakes, you know, and I'd come home drunk, and she'd complain about it. She quit that later on. But she, really, she'd complain about, you come home drunk at night. I said, well, I've been milking snakes and it's nerve-wracking. And I said, I'll take a drink to relax my nerves, you know. And I get relaxed all over, you know. Really relaxed. But anyway, you know, you're a good bunch of people. You've laughed at some of the damnedest things here tonight. Keith was right about it. Y'all laugh at anything. But anyway, I'd go home, you know, and in the early years of our marriage, Jackie found out that it was a no-no to talk to me when I was drunk because I'd act out of the way to her. So the next morning is when she'd go into her act, you know. And back then, we wasn't too prominent, and we didn't have too much, and we had a weak spring, you know, in her bedroom. And that's a count for five head of children, and weak spring. No, I was... But Jackie'd sit down on the edge of the bed every morning, I'd, you know, trying to sober up, and she'd sit down on the edge of the bed, and she weighed about 160 or 50 or 40 pounds, something like that, and I'd roll up under her. and I couldn't get away from her. And she just gave me hell. I'm going to leave you, you know. And I said, God, please do, you know. For God's sakes. And she'd done this for years and years since she got in this fellowship. Well, she finally got to where she'd leave me some. But anyway, I'll have to tell you about this episode. One day a fellow in Fargo gave me one of these big fox squirrels. And I know why he gave him to me. He was mean. You've heard of the junkyard dog. Well, no dog would mean this squirrel, really. But this squirrel had caught his wife, and he'd caught her in the wrong place. She'd, you know, back then a lot of women wore dresses, and this squirrel was bad to run up run up women's dresses, and it's embarrassing, really. But anyway, he gave me the squirrel, and we'd turn the squirrel loose. See, we didn't have television back then to speak of. Nothing to do on Friday and Saturday night but drink liquor and watch the squirrel race, you know. And it's crazy. People would walk around in the zoo, you know, and the men could kick him off of them, but the women, you can't kick, you know, just so high. And, you know, I said, we'll help you, you know, and hell no, you won't either. But this was a real mean squirrel, and he would bite you. I'm talking about bite you. And we'd turn him out and give him his exercise every morning, you know. And by this time, I was drinking vodka because, you know, you were running a business. You need something you can't smell. I was drinking vodka. And by the way, in South Georgia, yellow jackets are mad. If you want to see, you know, if a man's drinking, just follow the yellow jacket. Usually the yellow jacket will wind up around his head somewhere if he's drinking. But anyway, this particular day, we had a preacher come to our zoo, and I was talking to the preacher and gassing him up. We had a service station, and the preacher mentioned the squirrel being out of the cage. I said, yeah, preacher, he got out this morning. And the preacher, well, I could have stopped him at any time, but the preacher said, George, I'll show you how to get him back in, you know. I said, no, it's all right, leave him alone. But you know how preachers are, you know, all of you know how preachers prayed for you and helped the families with the drunks, you know. They're persistent people. And he got him a bag of peanuts and went to back in the zoo to tow the squirrel back to the cage. And the squirrel, he was sitting up on a post in the back end of the zoo, if you could get the picture. And the preacher had a Panama hat on and walked to the back end of the zoo and squatted down, and I could see the hat. And the squirrel left his podium, you know. And I seen the preacher's feet fly. And he lost his hat and his religion. Praise the Lord. And really, he was throwing that squirrel off of him, and that squirrel was like a yo-yo. He'd come back. And he liked to eat that preacher up, people. Eat him up. Directly, the preacher got away from him, and he run back up there. And bit him through his chest and scratched him all up. And he says, George, he said, that squirrel's here to kill me. I said, Lord, have mercy. I said, yeah, preacher, I see it. He said, you reckon he's got rabies? I said, I'll tell you what we'll do, preacher. We'll cut your damn head off and send it to Atlanta. If you come back with rabies, we'll kill that damn squirrel. But you know what? That preacher, he got mad with me, and he left, and I lost his business. I even think he quit praying for me, because I drank for about another 20 years, you know, and got in a lot of trouble. But anyway, by this time, my drinking was making progress, and really, I was getting in trouble, but Stephen Foster State Park. Any of you ever heard of that little park? It's a state park in the state of Georgia. It's a beautiful place. It's located on Billy's Lake and on Jones's Island, 17 miles back there. So I told Jackie, I said, let's lease that park and I'm going to quit drinking and straighten my life up and we're going to live happily ever after in Hope and Okie Swamp. And we did. We moved back to the park and we lived happily ever after for 3 or 4 weeks, you know. And she says in her talk, she seen this big sign, you know, she went in the park, no alcoholic beverage, and she knew right then, you know, everything's going to be all right. Well, it wasn't. I got sicker and I got drunker. And I got in trouble. I turned over several boats on the lake out there, and it's not a place to turn a boat over, you know. The fact is, when I left there, my insurance over $1 million ahead on the people that we carried in the swamp because of our shenanigans. There's alligators out there. Fact is that we never had anybody drowned in Billy's Lake. Usually an alligator would save them, you know. I mean, really, we never had anybody drowned. But anyway, my drinking progressed, and finally, after about a year and a half, Jackie, she got tired of this mess, so she moved back to Fargo. We owned a little home over there in Fargo, and it was in the winter time, and she just got tired of it, and that was a good move. But I didn't want her to stay by herself at night, so I got to traveling back to Fargo to be with her. I know she wanted to be with me because I was back on moonshine by this time. And I know she loved the smell of that, you know. A man in a bed where you have moonshine on his breath is a wonderful smell. Now, if you women got by that era, you're wonderful. It's wonderful. But it's a terrible smell. But I'd come into Fargo and spend a night with her, and I'd go back to the park. We had to leave a man at the park. Now, I'm getting to something here that's really insane. And I'm trying to give you a picture of our park. And we had to leave a man in the state of Georgia, Henry D. Struble. He's still director, a very good friend of mine. He required me to have a man on our park 24 hours a day. And I left this ex-Marine at my park. And he was I can't say whether he's an alcoholic or not, but he's bad to drink. And I remember one night in particular, I waited, and Jackie, she never would let me in the house, so I drove back to the park, and I was about drunk, and got back to our beautiful park, and it was wide open, concession building, restaurant was open, and all the lights were on, and nobody there. And it was a terrible thing, you know, to leave a state park unattended. Not really, because some alcoholics, it's just one of them old normal things you do. But I was really aggravated with this fella. His name was James, and I stayed around that park there for about 30 or 45 minutes, and he showed up. He was driving a damn state truck with a big emblem on it. And I said, James, where in the hell have you been? He said, I've been out to get me some liquor. He said, you're about half drunk. I said, well, I'm the damn boss, you know, and that aggravated me. But he brought a couple of long-haired hippies with him. He picked up somewhere down the road, and they come into the park with him, and I don't remember what we called them back then. It wasn't hippies, I'm sure. But I didn't like them. In fact, yes, I had a few other vices, you know. I didn't like a lot of different people. But anyway, James walked into my building and walked around behind my desk, pulled out a half a pint of whiskey, said, let's take a drink. I said, James, if you don't put that whiskey up, I'm going to shoot it out of your hand. And it just tickled hell out of him, you know. So I just pulled out my gun and proceeded to shoot it out of his hand. To take one shot, I'm a pretty good shot. And his eyes kind of dilated, he acted like he was scared, you know. Now, really, I don't know whatever happened to them hippies. We never did see them. Really. So help. The next morning, we couldn't find any tracks. Now, back then, we had that UFO scare, you know, and somebody from outer space might have picked them up. I do know this. After they went out to the front of that building, they went to the right. They stood in that damn swamp, you know, and that's a bad place to be, even for hippies. Because a bear don't even take to them people, you know. But anyway, James said, you wait just a minute, we'll shoot it out, you know. And I said, well, let's get on with it, you know. And he went and got his gun, and that's the proper thing to do at that time. And he said, you just count to 10 and we'll start shooting. I said, 1, 2, 3, and good God almighty, people sound like a horse galloping, you know. And he run into the back kitchen back there and wanted to get it dark, you know, and so there was some lights. Now, this park didn't belong to me. It belonged to the state of Georgia. But we shot the lights out, you know, to get it dark before we could, you know, really shoot at one another. This is insane. And we proceeded to shoot at one another. Well, this is the first informal contact I had with God, because I know he was looking out after two fools, you know, because I hid behind my desk and the splinters was hitting me in the head. And I said, my God, I better get up from here. He's going to hit me in a minute, you know. And we just shot at one another and shot at one another. And finally, I crawled over behind an Atlanta heater. The next morning, we had to remove that heater. He had riddled it. And God was looking out for me and this man. And the state property, too. Really. There was these big glass doors back there. He shot both of them out the first time. Bam, bam! You know, and just shot them out. I said, Lord, how much? There goes $250. You know, I'm thinking about always thinking, you know. But directly, he run out of ammunition. But before that, old James... He'd quit firing. I'd say, hey, James, said, yeah. And he'd answer me. You know? Now, that's a sign of insanity, people. Really. If a man ever shoot at you, don't you answer that knocker. But old James, he's a Marine, you know, and he was drunk. And he'd, yes, sir. Bam, 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 bam. And I'd shoot him. But I wouldn't answer him. I had, you know, I was sober enough. I knew that, you know, he'd liable. But he knew about where I was at. But what I'm trying to say is God was looking out for us when we couldn't look out for ourselves. And this went on in my life, right on and right on. And I got in trouble, and it got worse. And then finally, Jackie, she threatened to quit me, you know, and I told her, I said, well, I got out of this state of Georgia. They didn't do anything to me, you know. They said, George, just clean up your mess and move on, you know, and quit your drinking. I quit, and, you know, for at least a week. But I was an alcoholic, and Jackie was worried about me, and she'd heard about this AA thing over in Waycross, Georgia. That's right across the swamp, and she'd contacted a man, and he carried me to my first AA meeting. This was 30 years ago, 28 years ago. And I went to AA and Waycross with this man. I didn't want to go, but I wanted to get her off my back and this man off my back, and so I went to the meeting with him. We went through the rigmarole like Judy and Mary Jo was talking here tonight, and I wasn't impressed, you know. But what I'm saying is we are seed planters, people. We plant seed. We never sober anybody up in this fellowship, but we're seed planters. And this man, that far back, was planting seed with George Sermon. And he planted some seed. And we went to the AA meeting in Waycross, and on the way home, I asked him to stop in Manor, and I got me a gallon of moonshine, you know, just to hold me till I got home. I knew I had some drinking whiskey at home, and I wanted enough to hold me until I got home. Now, I don't know whether he ever broke his chip or not, but he got drunk with me. And that's something else about that. Never go on a 12-step call by yourself. You know, you're liable to get drunk with it. But the next morning, it was the same bed routine with Jackie. I was up under, and she was giving me hell. You'd rent that marriage, you know. You've got him drunk, and you come in here, and nothing's working out. I said, well, I'm going to straighten that marriage up, honey. This afternoon at 5 o'clock, I'm going back to Homerville and talk with Moore and straighten his family up, you know. And by the way, I'm good at marriage counsel now. If anybody, after the meeting tonight, needs to... any counseling, I'll do my best. And I'm good at it. But anyway, that afternoon at 5 o'clock, I was a 5 o'clock drunk. And by the way, I've never drank anything in the morning because I read somewhere in a book that if you drank in the morning, you were an alcoholic. And I didn't want to be an alcoholic, you know, but I had a drinking problem. But I drank at 5 o'clock. I borrowed Jackie's Rambler, station wagon. You know, that's insanity in buying a damn Rambler. You know, I mean, well, we were in trouble way back there, really. But I borrowed a car and I started to Homerville and stopped out at a black woman's there and got me a pint enough to hold me to get to Moore's. And on the way to Homerville, though, I was tired and give out the night before, and I went to sleep on the road, and I run over a few of them signs on the side of the highway. And I've talked with Tom Moreland, director of the highway department up here, and asked him to move them signs down in the ditches. It saved the state a lot of money, and it saved a lot of alcoholics' lives, really. It would. You know, you remember you drive along the road and you pass out and wake up and you jerk it back on the road, you know? Well, usually you're just on the shoulder when you do that, so, you know. And you save yourself. But anyway, I went to this man's house and asked to speak to him and his wife, and he said, hell no, you can't come in my house, you know? And I should have took a, you know, clue then, but I didn't. And I didn't know he was a Golden Glove boxer either. Really, I didn't. And I didn't know he was that mad. He didn't really act that mad. You know, really, he didn't act that mad. But he said, let's drive out of town. I should have known better than do that, you know, but I didn't, you know. I was drinking. But we drove out on Delt's Curve north of Homerville on US 441. It's a real sharp curve, and we got out and started talking seriously, and Myron, he wanted to fight. So I just hauled off and hit him with my chin. I mean, just knocked the fight up. You know? And I fell down the ditch, and he liked to beat me to death. And I'd crawl back up that ditch, he'd knock me back down. And that's the only place I ever hit him, with his nose and my chin. He liked to kill me. But anyway, he just beat me, people. You know how drunk can take it. But, I was crawling, I said, hell, I'm giving out. I said, this is crazy, you know, to crawl up out of that ditch. I think I'll fall on the highway some, you know. And I did. He hit me three or four more times, and I just fall on the highway. And I'd get up, and directly I heard him. I said, yeah, you bastard, I've got you whipped now, you know. And he took off down the road, you know, and left me. I said, come back here, get some more of this, you know. But he wasn't, you know, he's a coward, you know. He just scared him to death, you know, the way I beat him. But anyway, my brother-in-law was administrator of the hospital, and I was on the school board at this time in Clinch County. And on the board of registrars and Democratic Executive Committee, and I knew I'd get some service at the hospital, so I crack up this Rambler and run around at the emergency room, and there wasn't anybody in the emergency room, so I come up to the nurse's station there and told the nurse I need some damn service, you know. Miss Sherman, there's some sick people here. Well, she didn't know I was that sick. I was bloody all over from the waist up. She said, I'll call the doctor, just be still. And boy, I give them hell that night. And she called the doctor, and there's two of them showed up there at the back door. They're wearing blue uniforms up. And one of them was an anesthesiologist. Now, that's a new name I've learned since I've been here. See, I'm getting educated. He had a nightstick about it long. And he did. And I woke up not in the merch room, but in jail. Now, you know, my God, they could hear me 4 or 5 blocks around. I told everybody that could hear me I was in jail, you know. I am in jail. I want to get out of this, you know. And the trouble was the mosquitoes in Homerville. It was a bad year for mosquitoes, and they were so big, people, they'd fly up to the bars and walk through, and then they'd attack me, you know. And they was eating me up. They squelched all over. And I was telling the jailer and everybody about that. And it was terrible, you know, in that old pukey blanket I'd wrapped up in. And the sad part of it is, you know, we say we never hurt anybody but ourselves, you know, and when we drank. But I can remember the next morning about 5 o'clock, my old man, my daddy, he came down to the hall of that jail to get his oldest son out. Now, that wasn't the last time I got in jail, but it was the last time he come after me. You know, I was ashamed. But this is alcoholism, and that's what it's all about. It's people you hurt, but first we have to realize we're hurting. But anyway, I promised Jackie, I went back to the swamp, and I said, Jackie, I'm never going to drink anymore. I really did. I made up my mind then, and I went to a doctor. I'm going to quit smoking, I'm going to quit drinking, I'm going to quit the other things. I just about quit the other thing, you know. She knew that, you know. She knew that. If you drink very much, you quit the other thing. But anyway, I went up to Homerville to a doctor, and I said, Doctor, my nerves are bad. I've quit smoking and drinking, and I need something for my nerves. Well, he gave me a little old white pill, and it was a beautiful little pill, really. It was all just about the size of your fingernail, and it makes you feel so wonderful. You know, it was your motor just idling. You could be doing 100 miles an hour. I'm talking about you could be everywhere at once. You know, I mean, you were just an explosive situation. But I knew them white pills would run out, so I went to Lake City, Florida, and got me some more pills, and I went to St. Mary's, Georgia, and got me some in Folkestone, and I had 2 pocketfuls of pills. And I took too damn many of them things. You know, I just got my times messed up, my hours and stuff. And Jackie, we'd have these tourists, you know. We got a lot of them come down from up north, and they're living in Atlanta. Now they're not tourists anymore. We call them Yankees in South Georgia. I don't know what you people call them up here, but they're from up north. They're from up yonder. But anyway, they'd come down to the swamp, and we'd shake them down, you know, take them for a boat ride and tell them about the birds and the bees and the alligators and the trees and we'd shake them down out there on the cruise, you know, shake down. But Jackie, you know, I'd talk to them. I love to talk to people. And she'd pull me away from them, and I was talking, and I'd spitting on them, and I didn't realize it. But this medicine I was taking, you know, it was my medicine. My doctor gave it to me. I got 2 pocketfuls. There ain't nothing wrong with that, you know. And I was low rolls of spit come out. And I could talk 90 miles an hour, and, you know. Really, I was fast. God, I was fast. I got so fast, I tell you what I done. I had the state truck, and I said, Jackie, I'm going to take the mail to Fargo. You know, I'd run, jump the pickup, and get to Fargo. I said, what in the hell am I? Oh, the mail, and I'd left it. But I lost my cotton picking mind, people. This damn stuff run me crazy. Now, off the liquor, on the dope, and got bad shape. And one night, I told Jackie, I said, honey, I'm going, I'm leaving. You know, this thing's getting fuzzy out there. I can't see things, you know. And she carried me to a merch room in Homerville, you know, the same one I'd been in before. And they carried me up in there, and this doctor put these tubes down and started pumping me out. And the last thing I remember is 7 days later, I woke up in my own private room with a long sweet sweater on, you know, just... it's wonderful. But you can't do a thing with that sweater on, you know. And the first thing it itches your nose, you know, and you can't get to it. And there's no way to get to your nose. Or any place else, that matter. But thank God, listen, thank God I come out of that mess. You understand what I'm talking about. God left me here for a purpose. And there's a thin line, people, running through our lives tonight. I want to tell you about it. God's in our lives. And He's the master weaver. And He's weaving, and we're doing His work out here tonight. The same thing. We had to grow to get to where we're at tonight. And without tribulation, there's no spiritual growth. Remember that. Anyway, you know, one fellow said, I was in Homerville and seen the A sign, I decided I'd go to AA, you know. No, hell, none of us got here that way. We suffered. And it got worse. And Jackie got worse. And then I was 32 years old, I had my first spiritual awakening. Jackie was in the mental institution in Jacksonville taking shock treatment. And I had a little boy with rheumatic fever. And I want to tell you people this because maybe it might help sometimes. I was this big old two-story colonial home that I'd bought with tax money. I never paid income tax. You know, back then I was against tax. I still am a little bit. I don't like to pay tax. If I can get out of them, I don't pay tax. But I do pay my pro rata share now. I think I do. Anyway, you might have an IRS drunk in here, you know. He'll report you. Them folks, they work on commission, I think. You get yourself in trouble. But anyway, let me get back to the spiritual end of this thing. I bought this big old two-story colonial home, and I was down there in it. My wife's in the mental institution. I had a little boy with rheumatic fever. God suffers things to happen to us alcoholics to bring us around. And thank God he does. And I had phlebitis in my left leg. I'm glad Judy's talking about that. Not smoking, you know. That'd kill me. I smoke, Lord have mercy. Anyway, I had Jackie in the mental institution. I went back to Fargo, Georgia after I bought this place, and I told my mother, I said, Mama, something's got to give. I said, I'm in one hell of a mess. I don't know anything about God. I'd mock God. I'd mock God. She said, Son, the only thing I can tell you to do is pray. That night, I drove back to Crooked River down in this big old two-story colonial home and got on my knees and tried to pray. It was about like cigarette smoke. I couldn't pray. I tried and I couldn't. And I got up from then. I said, well, the hell with this. I'm going to kill myself. And I had that little 32 Smith & Wesson. And I started through this hall to get that gun to kill myself. And a voice spoke to me. And it said, go back and pray. Now, these psychiatrists told me later on, I drank some more, but they told me, said, you're schizophrenic. Well, thank God I'm schizophrenic, because that stopped me. I was going to, you know, do the harem scarum. Ready. I was ready, people. I was wanting to get out of my misery. And that boy spoke to me twice that night and said, go back and pray. And I crawled back over that chair and got on my knees. And I said, oh, Lord, my God, have mercy on me. And he did. A light come in the room and illuminated me, changed my heart. I hated blacks, Jews, Catholics, and some white people. I'm sorry. Forgive me. I'm in the wrong... See, I'm too far north. I'm sorry. Too far north. See, in South Georgia, you say I can get away with it, but too far north. I'm sorry. Forgive me. Hail Mary. I got half of them back. They didn't know I could do that. Hail Mary. I like old folk Paul, though. He's a good old boy. You got to find somebody you can like in this outfit. Anyway, that voice... changed me. It was something like happened to Paul on the road to Damascus, but for God's sake, there's nothing to me. Really, there's nothing to me. Far from it. But God did. He does answer prayer. That's what I'm going to tell you. And I stayed sober 3 years without AA. I was mimicking this thing, and I was doing, you know, going to church. I'd go to church, really. And I'd sit up on the front, and I'd clap and shout and sing and praise the Lord, and got drunk. You know, I mean, well, really, what happened, I met Mogan David. Any of you know him? Just a little wine. A priest told me about it. A little wine. He said, just a little wine each day. You know, about 2 gallons. But anyway, I got drunk, people, and then I was off to the races. You know where the races are? And by the way, did I tell you I was real educated? I've been through some of the finest institutions in South Georgia. You know, I was in the VA hospital for the mentally insane for 28 days, I was supposed to, and I graduated in 2 weeks. Really, at the top of my class. Me and a boy jumped out of window and run home. No, what happened was, me and this boy, we decided we'd take these 2 weeks and quit. We knew it all, really. I knew how it works, 12 steps, traditions, all this stuff, you know, in psychology. I'd done read all that stuff. And I knew as much, really, as them people. And we went back. He went to Willacoochee, Georgia. That's right up above Fargo, you know. And I'll get you a road map, and I'll show you these places. They're on the map. And I went to Fargo. But the sad part about that old boy, about 6 months later, he got drunk on beer. You know, you won't get too drunk on beer, but he did. He lay down across his bed, 46 years old, regurgitated and vomited and died. Drowned in his vomit. You know, God was trying to tell me something then. I didn't, you know. But anyway, I drank some more, but finally I got on some more pills. You know, I back to and pills. And then in 1973, I couldn't get a job in Fargo. I'd been in one more shootout with some folks from Fargo and got shot, and the grand jury no-billed me, but I was stigmatized. That's another name I've learned since I've been in AA. I'm getting real educated. There's a stigma behind George Sermon and his family, you know. There's people scared of me. Really, in Fargo, Georgia, they see me coming down the sidewalk, and we got sidewalks there. They'd cross over, you know. They said, well, he's liable to shoot you or something. Something bad liable to happen. You running that fellow, that little black cloud over me, he'll hurt you, you know. But what I'm saying is finally I wound up in a mental institution in Savannah. You know, it's a beautiful place, really. It's got some well-kept lawns and manicured, you know, everything's nice. And padded cells, you know, everything. I mean, really, they keep the padding in all them things, and straight jackets, and the whole works. And I went in, and Jackie and the kids carried me. Now I have five children, they all carried me to Savannah. And we went in there, and I checked in, you know, like, we gave me my own bed. Really, I didn't have to sleep with anybody. Slept by myself. And when I woke up, these pills wore off in about 3 days, and here I was, about a 41-year-old man in a mental institution, and these crazy folks went, I said, my God, I'm in a damn crazy house, you know. And they didn't have television, but we didn't need it. They was crazy. So help me. Them people running the walls. You can see where the track's on the walls. We just said, well, there he goes. You're betting on the air. I'll take five on him. Reckon he'd run down and fall out, you know, and they'd holler, nurse, get him. But really, I think that I needed to be in these places so I can tell you about it, you know. You wouldn't know about it if I hadn't told you. But about the third or fourth day, I was sitting in there in my T-shirt, you know, and being the dignified fellow I was supposed to be, and talking to the nurse, Mary Powers, and they brought a lady in from Waycross named Virginia. I won't call her last name, but Virginia was sitting at the end of this table, and they observed her, you know, and I was observing her too, you know. I was, she's crazy. She was doing that fish number. Y'all ever seen them do that, you know? That means if you're fixing to get away from here, you better get somebody to catch you, you know. But I said, Miss Powers, I said, that woman's sick, you know. And the record, she kicked out of the Hames and the Tracy's and fell over backwards and turned blue. I said, Lord have mercy, Jesus, you know. I mean, I'm a sick man, you know. And Miss Powers said, Mr. Sermons, we can't get a hold of a doctor. Can you help us, you know? And then marriage counseling, doctor, I'm pretty good at all that. So naturally, here comes George, and he runs down in, grabs a woman with a jaw, and reaches in her mouth, pulls out her tongue, and she throws me up against the wall. That'd kill me. You know, they really have that superhuman strength. I said, Miss Powers, I'm going to lay down. I feel sick, you know. And I went to my room, and before I left, I said, listen, y'all better watch that woman there. I said, she's crazy, you know. So I went to my bed, lay down, and I said the Lord's Prayer. You know, I didn't know the Serenity Prayer that good for that time. But anyway, and directly I heard somebody holler, Mr. Sermons. I said, Lord, I'm on call again. And some little crazy woman, you know, was nutty too. All of us are nuts now in this place. I carried her to the commodity. I mean, where I'm talking about, to the place where they sit down. Before they put her to bed, and she had another one of them fits. And it was in a stall. You understand what I'm talking about? And they called me because I was the only sane one ever besides this nurse. And so I run in there. And there was a lady about this big around and about that tall, no clothes on. And I didn't know that they took a bath in the same place, you know, and it was really. And she run up one of these stalls. Now, I don't know whether they ever got her out of that thing or not. Because, so help me, she was too big to be in a stall. But there was a black woman then. Her name was Miss Johnson. She said, Miss Sherman, she said, if I hold her jaw down, you know, and they can't but two get one of them stalls at a time. And it's real uncomfortable then. But anyway, she reached up on her, Miss Johnson did, and pulled her jaw down. I reached in and got her, her tongue in there. We went again. She knocked me plumb out of that damn thing. I said, the hell with this. I'm going home, you know. They did, you know, and I went home and lived happily ever after. No, hell, I didn't. No. It got worse, people. And I'm fixing to wind it up here in a minute. But this was in 1974. A year later, I was still on the pills and messing around, and you know, it was bad, people. And I couldn't hold a job. All I was doing was taking little guide trips into the swamp. You know what I'm talking about, Bob. And showing the people the birds and the bees and the alligators and telling them, you know, and about the fauna and all that stuff. And I could do that. And I'd take fishing parties out. I even do that today. But anyway, I carried this man, there's two people back in the swamp. There's two grown men. One of them's Tacoma, Washington. The other up here around Gainesville, Georgia. And they had their wild turkey and the beer and stuff. And I told them, I said, fellas, you know, now y'all can drink all you want. I'm your guide. And it's all right. You drink all you want to, but I can't do it. So we headed back into the Ocos Pinocos. That's the name we call it. Back on what they call Big Water. And it's a beautiful place back there, people. Still believe there's some Indians back there, really. I mean, it's some place you just don't see, you know what I'm talking about. But we got back there and we started catching fish. I'm talking about some of them were so big they're wearing lipstick. Warmouth perch as big as your hand. Really. We caught so many, we had to put them in two piles. One pile wouldn't hold them. That's beating the thing you ever seen in your life. Anyway, I know that there's four or five sleeper, and then I'm going to hurt. But anyway, we got back on big water, and they were drinking, you know, and having fun. And these people could have fun. And they said, won't you have some wild turkey? I said, please, sir. No, sir. I'm sorry, I can't drink. I said, I have problems. You know, when I drink, it does me. You know, and I knew this for this time. Really, I knew I was in a hell of a mess for this time. But anyway, they kept on. The sun was beating down, you know, and they got louder and louder. And finally, I'd give in. I said, give me just one drink. And that's all it takes, people. For me, just one drink. Wild turkey, I won't ever forget. And I got right up in the middle of that board in the front end of that boat. And we proceeded to drink, you know. And they said, Mr. Sherman, that's enough. I said, no, hell no, we're going to drink some now. They said, well, you got to go. I said, you know, and I talked to ugly. I talked to them people like they were dogs. And I'm sorry the other day. And I hope sometimes I can straighten that part of my thing out about, you know, telling them I'm sorry I did what I did to them. But I got drunk. And they begged me. One of them was crying. Said, please take us in. We're ready to go. You know, he knows because this thing, I was a Jekyll and Hyde, people. This thing had changed my personality. Really. It made me a damn madman. And I cranked up that motor, you know, to go in. And I said, sit down there, you know. And they was praying, please don't run so fast. And it was 10-horse motor. And if you ever get back to go back in that swamp, go up in that place. The run is not but about 4 or 5 foot wide. It's crooked. And I was cutting it, you know, and that wild turkey, I was about to fly. And I started around a big bend up there and hit a cypress tree, and this fella in front end of the boat knocked about 4 or 5 limbs out of it, you know, just bop. And this other fella tore up the state's boat, you know, the next seat in front of him, he just tore it up. And that fella said, oh, I'm dying. I said, hell, you tore up state property. You know? I said, you don't have any respect for anybody, you know, and the glasses hanging on his ear and him bloody all over. I said, and another thing, this is a federal refuge. Look at the limbs you broke out of that tree. You've got us all in trouble. And weren't that damn boat. But I knew I was in trouble. So when I got to the landing at Jones's Island, I never did stop the boat. I just went out and I went to the house. And I said, Jackie, I'm in trouble. Now, this was May the 21st, 1974. And I told her, I said, I'm going to have to go get some help again, you know. Some more help. Because I knew. And they had a warrant out on me. You know, for attempted murder. But I checked in May 22nd, 1974. Here's what happened. I checked in the treatment center in Waycross for 12 days. You know, I knew I'd been in all them others, and I knew everything, and I just wanted to see if they'd run them like, you know, run that one like did the others, and see if I could help them in the God and other human being, the exact nature of your wrong. I said, I won't never take them 2 steps, you know. You know what I mean? Think you got to, you know, if you're going to stay sober. But anyway, sorry, wake him up. I'm fixing it. But I did take them steps. I did. I stayed in there too long. You know, I stayed in there. Thank God I did. But I did make the 28 days in that fellowship, a woman in that fellowship. God uses people as instruments, you know, to plant the seed. And she planted some seed pretty deep. You know, she got on my behind. And she cussed me for everything but a gentleman. About the second week I was there, she was a main counselor. And thank God she did. She deflated my ego. I become willing to listen, and this is what happened. I took the inventory, I got out, and I got in this fellowship. I joined the Homerville group, and I started trying to carry this message. And I have never sobered anybody up, and I won't never sober anybody up. But I'm a seed planter. In South Georgia, I plant seed, and that seed is telling people our story, our message, giving them hope. Giving them something to hold on to. Now, I think this is what we've got to do, is reach back, you know. I'm talking about you now that's been sober 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years. And you say, well, we'll let the young ones do it, you know, the ones coming into fellowship. No. No, hell, people, you owe this fellowship. Remember that now. I owe it and you owe it. For your life. For your family, probably, if you still got one. And I started sowing these seeds the best I could. Now, really, Jackie, she got better, and the kids got better. Jackie got an Al-Anon about a year and a half later, and things really picked up. You know, it has a tendency to get better, don't it? Yeah, yes, it does. And God wanted me, where I was at that time, and I was picking deer tongue. Anybody in here know about deer tongue? I think Bob does. South Georgia's a little old weed. You go out in the woods and pick. People wouldn't hire me in Fargo and Homerville and roundabout. They were scared of me, and I don't blame them. I had some proving to do to them. And I started picking deer tongue, and I picked deer tongue and on my knees, you know, and I think God might have thought I was praying, but it wasn't. I was trying to make a living, you know. But things got better, and my group in Homerville made me their GSR in about a year and a half. Now, from an SOB to GSR in a year and a half, that's pretty good, you know. Well, finally, I was elected commissioner down there, Clinch County, and I started setting goals and working this fellowship. You know, I'm in this thing for the long haul. God willing. I was elected chairman of the Board of County Commissioners. Now, they didn't elect me chairman, and it was we run countywide for that job, and there was several fine people in that thing that wasn't doing 12-step work in Clinch County, and so they didn't get elected. But I'll promise you, people, if you do 12-step work and get in politics, it's wherever you do it at, you're going to get elected, because if you help some families, they're going to help you. But really, they elected sobriety in Clinch County, and my family got better, and I got better, and things really picked up. And today we've got a wonderful group in Homerville, wonderful AA. We've got Al-Anon in Homerville. And things are wonderful. All my kids, they used to, you know, I'd ask for a glass of water when I was drunk, and I'd have five glasses there, you know. Today, they live their life. Jackie, she lives her life, you know, if I leave her alone. Sometimes it's hard. But really, this fellowship, I owe my life to it. Over to you people. Now listen, if you're ever in Clinch County, I'm going to close now. If you're ever in Clinch County, and that's right down on the Georgia-Florida border. In fact, we're on the Georgia-Florida line. And if you happen to get caught for speeding or drunk and driving in Clinch County, I'm talking about, come on in to the office. My office is right across from the sheriff's office in the courthouse. Come on in and pay your fine. We'd be glad to have your money. Thank you and God bless you.